everyone, and welcome to episode 575 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing amazingly, and we have some fun topics today, but we got another co-host in Krim. Krim, I heard you were playing, Store Champs? Regionals? What did you play this weekend? I know you're doing some tournamenting this weekend.
I played, believe it or not, this mythical format in person. It's called Standard.
Standard?
It was for fun, of my own free will. I went out and I had a good time. It's wild. It's a concept, right?
That was not believable anymore, Krim.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah, sorry, everybody. I was trying to get some brownie points, you know? No. Like, it's fun. Standard's really good right now, and I love this Dimir Excruciator deck.
Mm. Yeah, that seems like the kind of deck you would enjoy. Yeah, that seems like a Krim deck for sure.
It's mill.
It's mill and control all in one. It's like the Krim heaven. Yeah, it's utopia over there. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about a couple of things. So first, we got Hasbro's financials for last year, and the numbers are kind of huge. So we want to talk about that a little bit. And then we're going to spend a bunch of the cast today with a question that Richard brought up, which was, is Thoughtseize too good for Standard in 2026? Not going to spend the whole cast talking about Thoughtseize, but we got a list of cards, and I'm kind of curious, with how much we've seen power creep in the format, would these cards be safe to print into Standard in 2026? So that's what we're working with today. Before we get into it, though, we got a couple of sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Today's show is also brought to you by Heavy Play, advanced gaming equipment. The ETB playmat features a unique folding design, allowing you to fit it into a standard laptop bag. It's available in a wide variety of colors and also with original art. Equipmate lets you snap all your gear onto the playmat to move between rounds. Not that you're going to need it, because you're going to be sitting at table one all night. So head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code mtggoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with the financial information, because I think these numbers and what we learned from the 2025 results are actually kind of interesting. So you can read all the financials, dig super deep into it. But the big numbers here that stuck out to me for 2025, Wizards of the Coast as a whole was up 45% compared to the previous year, which they said was a record. It's the most they've increased in 1 year ever. In Magic in specific, was up 59% compared to 2024. Huge numbers. Like, I guess this is somewhat expected, right? It was the year with Final Fantasy. But the other thing we learned is that it wasn't just Final Fantasy, because Avatar is the third best-selling set of all time. It's Final Fantasy, Lord of the Rings, Avatar number 3 on the all-time list. And apparently Lorwyn Eclipse, not technically 2025, but is the best-selling or fastest-selling in-universe set that has ever been made. So what do you guys think? I mean, Magic is just booming? Like, is all the criticism about Universes Beyond just wrong? I mean, when you see, like, if you see the Universes Beyond sets doing well, that makes sense, right? But when you see Lorwyn Eclipse being the best-selling in-universe set of all time, that has to mean that some of those people from Final Fantasy or Avatar are sticking around and playing Lorwyn Eclipse too, right? Like, how else could you take that? What do you guys make of these numbers?
I mean, yeah, there are the people that are sticking around and playing as well. Yeah, like you had mentioned. But I mean, Magic has gotten so big, right? I mean, this is we hear all like the negativity from like, you know, one side of the camp, but like there's a good amount of people that just play the game, have fun, and I don't know, it's like golf now, right? I feel like everybody it's like nerd golf. right? Because like where everybody plays Commander. Right. So it's like, do you want to play Magic this weekend? Sure. Let's play Commander. And then everybody just kicks back, you know, drinking whatever and eating and just talking and hanging out and playing Commander. So I think Magic as a game is getting played the most it's probably ever been played. But 1v1 is the one where I'm like, I have no idea, like, how those numbers look. I mean, right now, like, it's like maybe like 15 person standard events, 20, something like that. So
I believe they said at some point, and there's like a lot of documents released and the earnings calls. So there's a whole bunch of places you can find info on this. But I'm pretty sure they said at some point that like tabletop play in events or something was up like 20% or something compared to the previous year. So they made it sound like it was increasing. Who knows what that means? We've heard rumors of like stores inflating those numbers by having commander players sign in or whatever as they're playing standard. So who knows exactly what it means? But according to Wizards, like, they say that's heading in the right direction too. But what do you think, Richard? Like, were you expecting Avatar to be that big of a set? Like, is that kind of shocking at all?
Yes and no. I mean, so organized play includes pre-release. So you showing up to Final Fantasy pre-release pumps up the organized play numbers. So yeah, that kind of checks out. I think at this point, you can declare Universes Beyond a gigantic success, right? Like, I don't know how you can look this in the face and be like, oh yeah, Universes Beyond is ruining our game, whatever. The only thing is like, okay, there will be Universes Beyond flops and Universes Beyond bangers, right? Which one is which, right? And even if they get a flop, you know they're just going to keep trying until they hit a banger, right? Because if Avatar, like, the top three sets of all time are Universes Beyond, right? And then they have to make a special category for Universes Within, right? Lorwyn Eclipse, right? So you know things are going extremely well for them. So let's say Turtles flops or, like, Spider-Man flops, right? We don't really know what's going on. Let's say they do flop, then they'll just be like, ah, it was the wrong IP. Let's choose the right IP this time, boys. You know, like, that's what's going to happen, right? So Universes Beyond is here to stay, right? And, like, the numbers look crazy. Like, 45% growth at, you know, like, at a 30-year-old franchise or whatever. Like, that's kind of nuts, right? So Star Trek, here we come. Like, I don't know, right? Like, this looks very good, right? If you're hoping that the wheels will fall off and we'll go back to only Universes Within, I think we are far past that, right? So I don't know what to say, right? Avatar makes sense, right? Like, it was very popular. People liked it, and people think of it as Universes Beyond done right. But I would also just question how much this online narrative matters whatsoever, right? Because you would still think there are, like, all these haters for Avatar and Final Fantasy and things like that, but apparently not, right? Like, take all the Magic players playing the game and just increase it by half. Like, that's what Universes Beyond did last year, right? Like, that's kind of nuts, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is super nuts. Do these numbers scare you at all? So, like, the numbers are obviously immensely positive for 2025. There's no doubt about it. Those are huge numbers. At the same time, they always got to top themselves, right? The line's got to keep moving up. Is there any worry that these numbers are so good that this year's inevitably going to be a disappointment because it's going to be really hard for you to go up 59% every year, 45% every year when you're a 30-year-old company, and maybe your product slate isn't as strong with, you know, Turtles and Star Trek compared to last year with Final Fantasy and Avatar? But is there any worry that there's going to be even more pressure to, like, keep making more things and more sets and more secret layers to be able to top these numbers again in 2026, 2027?
I mean, they're a business. I assume they always want to top it, right?
Yeah,
but I also hope they kind of keep those expectations realistic. I still don't think we ever, like, top Final Fantasy.
I was gonna say it's easy to top this because it is just a licensing deal away. You know what I mean? Like,
you
don't have to go
Final
through
Fantasy?
The hard work of making your own world or IP, right? You just gotta ink the deal with Pokemon. Right. And
okay.
You can definitely do
all
it
right
by forking over more money. Right. Like, oh, we only gave Final Fantasy, I don't know, like 10% royalties. Right. Pokemon, 30% for you because we love Pikachu. Right. Like, OK, so maybe Pokemon is not attainable. Right. But there's got to be other franchises that are better than Final Fantasy, which there should
Nintendo?
Be. Right? Final Fantasy is not that big of a franchise in a vacuum. Right. So
no, but it's
just
fan
inking
base.
New deals, right?
but the Final Fantasy fan base, I think, support, you know, Final Fantasy to the ends of the earth, right? And I don't know. I mean, do we have anything? Like, I feel like maybe Nintendo, but I don't know. I don't think there's anything that tops it.
I think the best argument for something eventually topping Final Fantasy, and I don't know what that thing is, but I think the best argument is actually just Avatar. Like, I don't think any of us expected, Avatar. Like, well, no. Remember when we were talking
like
about...
Like blue people?
No, yeah, no, Avatar, like the set the that last came out last... The one that came out last year, the set that came out. Like, when we were talking about Avatar 6 months before it released, we were kind of like, eh, I don't know how it's going to be. Like, maybe it'll do well, maybe it won't do well. Like, you know, it's not going to be a Final Fantasy. And then it ends up being the third best-selling set of all time. So I think there's probably IPs out there that we aren't even thinking of that could end up just being a perfect fit for Magic and have this ravenous fan base who, you know, has these desires for merch that's being unmet by the market. And like all of a sudden you end up with another best-selling set of all time. So I think Avatar's success is what makes me feel like something will eventually top Final Fantasy.
I'm not opening the can of worms about whether Avatar is an anime or not, but like the thing here is I think the IP that would beat it would be an anime. And like that is... If we decide to actually move into, like, that world, I think it's an anime.
If it's an anime that I have heard of, I bet it could do really well.
Dragon Ball?
Because if I have heard of it, then that means it's very popular because I don't follow anime. So I know, like, Naruto. I know Dragon Ball. There's one other, what's the other?
Cowboy Bebop.
That's like, those are the three I know off the top of my head. So I imagine there's got to be something like that that could be huge, right?
I mean... They've said they have the next Final Fantasy. They are like 100% put it in the bag. We have something inked that will outperform Final Fantasy. So they have declared it. It's like they've declared they've won before the turn has started, right?
I believe they said this year too.
They're very confident that this is happening. And I'm very confident too, right? Like we're even before Final Fantasy, right? Like it's such a like niche IP. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, it worked out very well, but, like, there's got to be more. And so far, the darts we've thrown have missed. Like, Assassin's Creed, you know, probably more popular as a franchise than Final Fantasy, right? Spider-Man, obviously way more profitable as a franchise, right? These have been flops, right? Turtles, everyone's declaring it a flop, right? We don't know yet, right? But obviously, it's a much larger IP than Final Fantasy. So they exist, but they don't always translate into a win. So it's up to Wizards to find it. And I think Krim is right. It's going to Japan somehow, right? Like, if you draw a line through all the successes, it's the weebs. Yep. The weebs are very financially successful, apparently. We have all this money to burn on Magic cards. So, like, it's got to be something going through Japan. I would look at 90s shows currently getting a live action. That's what I would look at. That means it's popular enough that people at Hollywood have decided to like invest in a live action like 30 years past its prime, which means it's not actually past its prime, right? So like Avatar is a live action, by the way.
Yep.
We could always return so for Legend of
Korra. I don't know.
Korra.
I look at that, right? It has to be nostalgia bait. So it's got to be some kind of old
Dragon
thing.
Dragon Ball.
Speaking...
I mean, look, I know they have their own card game, but all of but their card games are bad. So, like,
speaking of old 90s IPs and the crossover, that's something we've talked about before, right? And the other thing we got out of this earnings report is some player demographics, which I think are interesting. And the most interesting one, average tabletop Magic player, how old? How old would you guess the average tabletop Magic player is? You probably already saw these numbers, so maybe
it's not fair to make it.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, Krim hasn't seen it.
Average age
of a tabletop Magic player, according to Hasbro.
I want to say I think it's actually older. I think it's going to be like 40s. Maybe 40?
Wow.
That's actually not that far off, but not quite that old. 35. The average tabletop Magic player, 35 years old, and has played for at least 5 years. That is the average tabletop Magic player. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
That's a number.
When you see, like, when you see Turtles or something, it makes it pretty clear, right, that they're going back for the nostalgia for the average player that 35 years ago or 30 years ago, 25 years ago was a kid watching Turtles. So a lot of the choices they make, I think, make a lot of sense within the context of these demographics to me, like with the crossovers they choose.
I feel like that it's always been skewing older, though. Magic, that is. Right? Like, Magic is, like, when I started getting into the game, there were dudes that were like already grayed out in hair, like, and like way older than me, right? And so like I feel like Magic has just always been loaded with like 30 plus, maybe 40 plus people, regardless of the franchises that are coming back in like nostalgic cycles now.
That's probably true. I think they're making sets that would be nostalgic for those players, kind of. I think that's what they're aiming for.
Yeah.
But Richard, what do you make of this? Do you think that that age is higher now than it was 10 or 20 years ago? Like, are there less young players today than there were in 2015 or 2005 or what? Choose a year.
I think most definitely. I think it's the same pack. We weren't boomers before, guys. Like,
we're just 20 years with ago. The game.
We were just normal people playing the game, right? And that was the majority of people. And we have just kept playing the game. And now, remember, 35 is an average, right? So that's like the dead center. Above it, 50% of the people reside, right?
Yep.
So the 40s, the 45s, the 50s, right, are up there as well, right? So I think this is actually very bad. Right? Because we're growing like with old people. It sounds weird, right? You want to grow with young people, right? You want like new people to come in, because once you get them in, they're here for 30 more years or whatever, right? So you actually want to hook them when they're young, right? So it's bad that the average age is so high. And I know Krim thinks it's okay to sit in, you know, like just imagine this, right? Your kid is 10 years old. You're like, I want to go play at the local game store. You're like, cool. And then they go there, and it's like 30, 50-year-old dudes, right? And you're like,
yeah.
Maybe this is not a welcoming environment for my child. You know, like, are there other children here? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, and maybe at some point, it's like so old, it's not threatening anymore. You know, like, oh, that's nice. Go play with the old people, son, right? But you don't really want this, like lopsided demographic, right? You want a nice mix so that when you send your kid there, it's not weird, right? You don't want it to skew too young either, right? You don't want to go there and just beat up on like 10-year-old kids all day either, right? You want it to be a nice mix. And I feel Wizards and Magic is skewing super old, and I think it's 100% price, right?
I was
like
going to say
the expense of the product, like no one can afford this really unless you have a job and you're playing, or you're so committed to this, or you bought in when everything was cheap, right? So I think that's part of it. And then part of it is just younger kids, digital, right? They want to play digital. They don't want to go, like, they don't understand the appeal of playing with cardboard. Like, why?
Wait.
Are you sitting there sleeving and de-sleeving things, right? You could just, with the click of
but
a
Richard,
button, have a deck.
Physical media's back, right? So, like, it went away, and now it's back. So all the younger demographics are like, yeah, like, okay.
I see younger kids glued to their phones still. Is this just a boomer thing? Are we just detoxing
ourselves? That can also
ourselves?
Be true. While physical media is back, at least when I say physical media is back, I mean more so like maybe not like middle schoolers, but I'm talking like now the kids that are like maybe in like senior year of high school going into like, you know, college. I was at Barnes & Noble's the other day. And I was just like,
wow.
It's so funny because Barnes & Noble used to be like, you know, it's people are like, oh, support your local Barnes & Noble.
It's an anime store now.
it's everything now, right? Like, but it's funny. There's so much culture and there's so much like vibes there. But it used to be like, you know, that was your local Walgreens. And now everyone's like, support your local Barnes & Noble, which sounds like support your local Target, right?
Yeah.
Like, but when you know what I mean? But Barnes & Noble is this like last bastion of like physical media where you go and like buy books and stuff outside of like mom and pop bookstores that are also super hole in the wall, hard to find. And you see that in like record stores, people are just going there, picking up physical media and things like that. And it's kind of sick. So I imagine, you know, recently when I'd go out to like my LGS and stuff, I'd see younger people. So it means that the game is slowly getting younger people in. I don't know, like, if it'll ever be the average age, because I assume it's, like, funny enough, I mentioned it earlier, Magic is kind of like nerdy golf. Golf is, like, what's the average age of a golf player, right? I think it's, like, in their 40s?
70.
Like, 45? 70? <Yeah.
laughs> Maybe not 70, but, like, yeah, I think it's up there.
Damn, dude.
Golf okay, slander. Well. Damn.
I think the golf comparison is actually pretty good, because when I think of golf, it's just, like, a few friends going out and like drinking beers and just like hanging out on the golf course in the sun for a few hours. And like, it's kind of like command. It's kind of like weird Commander. It's Commander, but you're like hitting a ball instead of playing with cards. Yeah, like it is kind of the same.
Golf, it's like weird Commander.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing worth mentioning is this is for tabletop only. So I wonder if we had numbers on Arena, if I bet that would skew somewhat younger. Like maybe you start on Arena and then eventually move on to tabletop, ideally, hopefully. But it would be interesting to see what the Arena numbers were, because I imagine it might be a bit younger. Because you can actually do that if you're 15 years old. You don't need, you know, a 35-year-old's disposable income to play Arena like you do tabletop. So interesting numbers, though. Let us know what you think. What's your experience with the demographics at your LGS? Does it line up with these numbers? Anyway. Let's move on from the finance stuff and get into our big topic for today, which is Thoughtseize too good for 2026 standard? Richard, you brought this up. We've been doing the best standard deck ever bracket. A new match actually went up today on the main channel, a Mono Black Devotion versus Jund, and I think it kind of inspired this comment because Mono Black Devotion was the last time that Thoughtseize was in standard, way back in 2013. I think 2014 it rotated, and Wizards hasn't reprinted it since because they feel like it's too good or too salt-inducing. What do you think? Is Thoughtseize actually too good for 2026 standard?
I was still in my peak Sweat Lord meta back then. I think it kind of might suck.
You still are.
I mean, okay, maybe in the current year, going out and just playing physical magic is sweaty, but I think Thoughtseize kind of sucks, right? Like, I you have deceit. You don't want to take two life. Imagine this was a Corey Steel Cutter meta, or you know what I mean? Or we have Slickshot Showoff. Oh man, Thoughtseize, I think, is disruptive. But it doesn't synergize as well as it does, like, you know, with like a Deceit does with like Superior Spider-Man. In this current setting, Thoughtseize is just a good card. It's just solid, but it's not what it once was.
What do you think, Richard? Is Thoughtseize too good still?
Seth, I'm a fraud. Everyone knows me as the Jund guy. I'm like, oh, I've cast like a million Thoughtseizes. I low-key hate Thoughtseize. I think it's like the worst card. Like, it is so bad. Like, it was already questionable like 5-10 years ago. In this day and age, it is so bad. It is like the card you don't want to cast. And it may be because I'm so bad now, right? Because you Thoughtseize, you see their hand, you're like, ugh. It's like I want to take everything or I want to take nothing. And I just wasted a mana and two life for no reason. But I think it's perfectly safe for standard, and I don't think it's that good. And I wouldn't even say it's a good card like Crimson. I think it's a bad card, right? Like, one mana, which is your one mana turn, right? And two life is a big deal now. The game has changed. We can talk about how the game has changed. And then you still have the situations where it sucks in a top deck war. But I guess we don't have top deck wars as much, so maybe it's okay, right? But go back like 10 years, one drop slot was useless, right? So like, you had nothing to play for one mana, right? So you could Thoughtseize, right? You're like, okay, it's just two life, and then maybe you throw them off the curve, maybe you break the synergy, right? The problem is now, one mana means remove anything, right? So you're losing insane tempo by playing a Thoughtseize, right? So the classic limited flip the tempo play, right? You're on the draw, they play a two drop, you respond with your instant one drop, remove it, and now you've regained the tempo. If you Thoughtseize, you can't do that anymore, right? And we've seen glimpses of this, right? You want to actually play a Ragavan on turn one. You know, you actually want to put down a Delver or something, right? Like something that's proactive. So the tempo is huge, right? The other problem is decks are way too good nowadays, right? Before, decks used to be like, you know, 10% good cards, 90% filler, right? And if the Thoughtseize hit the 10% good cards, you were golden, right? And then, you know, the filler you could deal with, right? The problem now is every card 2-for-1s and every card is an Avengers level threat. So this Thoughtseize is useless, right? You're like,
literally.
Yeah, I would like to take, you know, it is the classic, like they open their hand and it's like Snapcaster, Cryptic, Jace the Mind Sculptor. And you're like, great, we're screwed, boys, right? Like, no matter what you take, the rest of the cards are still going to wreck you. You know, you do their hand and they show you all of these like Raghavan level threats and you're like, well, there's nothing, like I just take one. It's cool, you know, I just wasted my turn because your threat is coming down and still wrecking me, right? And then removal removes everything anyway, right? So like you could take the removal that doesn't line up to throw them off, but doesn't matter, everything removes everything anyway, so like that doesn't do anything. You could try breaking their curve, but it doesn't matter, everyone's curve is so low that they can multi-spell every turn. It's very hard to break your opponent's curve nowadays, right? So I think Thoughtseize sucks. I think we can bring it back. I think a lot of people will play it and think they're making progress, but they're not, right? And you're going to want to side it out most of the time, and then when you still cast it, you're still gonna lose, so I don't know. I'm just the biggest Thoughtseize hater, guys. I'm sorry.
Let me play devil's advocate a little bit. So I will say, I think I would consider putting it back in standard. I think it's probably okay, but I think I'm a little higher on it than you guys are. So my arguments in favor of Thoughtseize actually being a very good standard card. I think it would see four of main deck play if it was in standard. I don't know if it necessarily be too good at the current power level, but I think it would still be very good. And here would be my argument. So first, we see lesser discard spells seeing play. Like the Excruciator deck plays some Intimidation Tactics, which can exile an artifact or a creature for one mana. So with Thoughtseize, it doesn't have everything. We see Duresses be like sideboard staples. So I would think that Thoughtseize would at least replace some of those, right? Are you really going to play Duress in your sideboard still if Thoughtseize is in the format? Or like Intimidation Tactics if Thoughtseize is in the format? The other argument I would say...
Seth.
Yes.
Maybe yes on some of those.
Really?
That control player against burn?
I'm sorry. Look, the cycling on Intimidation Tactics is not something to scoff at. I have found that more than useful. And then the exile clause is everything there. In this current meta, I would say this exact meta where graveyard hate people are main decking a playset of like rest in pieces here and there. I think the exile is pretty damn relevant. Just moving it into the graveyard isn't enough because Superior Spider-Man just gets it back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
That's fair.
I don't know. I kind of like the exile on Intimidation Tactics that comes with the cycling. Just saying. Oh. Now, Duress, is it better than that? Maybe. Yeah, I'd probably play it over that. But two life isn't anything to sneeze at. Just saying.
Okay, so here's my second argument then. If we're not going to buy that one... I feel like we've ended up in a place where more permanent types are powerful now, where you have very snowbally powerful creatures like Badger, Mole Cub. You also have artifacts like Monument to Endurance. You have enchantments like Artist Talent. Isn't the flexibility part of the selling point? Like, I feel like in the old days, if you only had to care about creatures, then you could do the same thing with some creature-only version of Thoughtseize. But now when you have to worry about busted enchantments, busted artifacts, busted creatures... Isn't just one mana get rid of the most important thing in your hand still like a powerful effect? Or is that not actually important enough anymore?
If it weren't for the fact that, example, if I just discard your monument and then you cast whatever, your super ancestral and then just draw it back plus two more, I've lost the game, right? I've just taken a turn to do absolutely nothing, lose two life. Because all your cards are just so high potency, right? Like Richard mentioned it, like the 10% of the deck that you like were hoping to hit way back when was way more powerful and disruptive than like now where everything, it's like 80% of your cards are good and 20% are fluff, right? So if I hit one of your 80% cards, it's like, well, I guess I'll just play my other win condition or, you know what I mean? Because like if I disrupt the monument, then you still have the talent. There's a lot of stuff that's still going on that you can't just like simply stop with a discard spell. Mm-hmm. Unless you're doing deceit and then getting it again and again and again and again. Then you are repeat thought seizing and then that is real good. And you don't even lose two life.
I do think the amount of card advantage there is today makes Thoughtseize way worse. I think it is true that just like everything generates card advantage, so you always have cards in hand. And it's like you said, it's pretty annoying if you're going to like Thoughtseize something good and then your opponent just draws three the next turn. It's like, well, what am I even doing with my life?
Between,
like, this is all pointless.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. Because like between that and like, let's say you Thoughtseize me, you see stock up and like something else is like, okay. I guess take a stock up.
No, but then you gotta take the steel cutter because you can't deal with the artifact. But then you know there's the the problem is Into the Flood Maw exists, right?
Yeah.
For one mana, I can deal with any permanent and guarantee to up you in tempo. Like Thoughtseize is a negative tempo play, right? You're losing life, you're losing mana, right? And you've also like signed yourself up for bad top decks, right? Yep. So it needs to be super impactful when it does the thing. But I would like to coin a new term, guys. We have win more, right? This is a lose less card, okay? You have a 20% win rate into this unfair deck. You put in Thoughtseize, your win rate is now 30%. Good job, boys.
You lose less, right? Yeah.
Like, you're still losing. You lose less. You feel like you've done something, but you haven't done anything effective. And I would say, just from a theoretical point of view, Magic is so fast and powerful now. It's super compressed. So by the time the game ends, you've only utilized, like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 mana. To take one of those and, like, throw it away for a Thoughtseize is, like, kind of rough. Right? Like, the amount of power you need per mana is so high now because the game ends so fast that are you able to afford doing this? Right? And remember, you need to play Thoughtseize on curve too, right? Like, sometimes not turn one Thoughtseize, you need to go 2 drop into Thoughtseize, right? Like, do you want to do that? And then cantrips. Oh my goodness, we have so many cantrips nowadays. It doesn't matter, right? You know, you're like, oh, it's a combo deck. Let me Thoughtseize them. Their hand is like 8 cantrips, 7 cantrips, right? You're like, wow, that's great, right? I can't do anything. It's like everyone has a built-in brainstorm it to the top versus Thoughtseize, right? Like, that's... Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing, right?
We have so many cantrips and redundancy, you know, like before it used to be you just had 4 of your thing. Now everyone has like 8 of, 12 of, you know, they have the
sleight of hand.
The stock up to like get it right in there, the sleight of hand. Like there's just, you know, consult, oh, thank you for discarding my hand. Just powers up Quantum Riddler. You really went and did nothing, yeah, right?
Quantum Riddler,
I think it is a really good point that I hadn't thought of, that like as games get faster and you get to spend less total mana over the course of the game, each mana you do spend is more valuable, right? Like there's just a smaller pool that you're working with. That is actually a really good point that I hadn't considered before. But okay, so I assume if Thoughtseize we think is safe for standard, Inquisition of Kozilek's got to be 2, right? Because that's like the worst. Same conversation basically we'd be having with Inquisition.
That might be unplayable.
Inquisition
now
would be worse. Okay,
right? Like we agree that Inquisition is worse than right, that by yes, landslide, right? I would choose everything. I would choose Duress. Right, like trade him just to rest.
Okay. That let me step in and actually, you guys, right? Okay, as a Jund player, you don't go 4 Thoughtseize, 2 Inquisitions always, right? It's a meta call. Sometimes it's 3-3, sometimes it's 4-2 the other way. I would say more often than not, it's been the other way because the 2 life matters, okay? But that's historically. Nowadays, everyone has a 6 drop that they play for 2 mana, which Inquisition does not hit, right? So you kind of need Thoughtseize to hit the cheaty mana cards, which might outstrip the 2 life, right? But the 2 life is a big deal, right? Because, like, if we are really playing all VV decks, where, like, everything is, like, 3 mana or whatever, right? Like, Inquisition is just as good as Thoughtseize without the 2 life, right?
Yeah,
so
that's
a big deal. Like, you know... Like 1 or 2 Thoughtseize a game, like puts you down like pretty low, right? So, but I don't know, like all of the elementals, like all these things that cheat mana,
man,
right? Like you can't hit them anymore. So that's a big problem. So maybe that's worth the life loss, but the life loss hurts. So Inquisition has its role.
Let's move on to another card I want to ask you about. This one's for you, Krim, because Richard sees the Thoughtseize player, even though he apparently hates Thoughtseize, which is hilarious. You're the control player, Krim. What about Counterspell? Like, for the first 20 years of Standard, Counterspell was just evergreen in the format, right? They would just always reprint it. Eventually, it changed into Mana Leak, like halfway through Magic's life, and they would always reprint Mana Leak. And then they kind of got rid of both of them, and we haven't seen either one. I know we have No More Lies now, which is like 2-color Mana Leak, which is as close as we've gotten. Do you think literal Counterspell would be fine in 2026 Standard, or is it too good?
It's so funny because we're talking about Super Mana Leak and No More Lies, right? And like, I still think the Exile is very good. And that card, it goes up and down when it comes to like the numbers in a deck, right? Right now, with Spell Snare and Caverns happening everywhere, everything uncounterable, and you can give everything uncounterable. I don't know. I actually think Counterspell wouldn't be absurdly game warping, like ending like in ban, like needing a ban. But I do think it is a very strong card. But Cavern of Souls and so many things right now make it look kind of bad. But now when those cards rotate and like Hexing Squelcher and all of that, that's when I think, okay, maybe Counterspell might be too strong there. Still.
Do you think those cards will ever rotate, though? Because that's something I've been wondering about. Like, because right now we have Cavern, we have Hexing Squelch, there's a lot of ways to fight through counters. Do you think that's just, like, a quirk of where we're at right now, that we happen to have a lot of counter hate? Or do you think that's an intentional choice by Wizards to power down control decks, essentially, because they see all the complaining on Arena when people hate control and they get all their stuff countered, and they know they can't actually just not print counter spells because people won't let them get away with that. But what they can do is print a bunch of Caverns of Souls and Hexing Squelchers, so counter spells just don't really do anything anymore. It's like a stealth way to nerf like those Drago control style decks. So do you think we'll just have those effects rotate, or should we expect Standard? We'll always have those effects because it's a way to get the format how Wizards wants it to be, which is less Drago control heavy.
I think it's less that they hate like having a Drago deck. I think it's more like there should be counterplay in every department, right?
Yeah.
And so I think Hexing Squelcher, something like that, is good to have, like some form, some functional reprint, that Spider Punk, all of that, great. I think Cavern, that's not something that I want to see all the time. I think Cavern alone is just kind of, you may think it's a bad land, but the fact here is that it kind of fixes in this elemental meta, and on top of that, allows you to just, it's hard to have a counterplay to a land, right? This is a piece, Hexing, just like I have to find a counterspell, you'd have to find a Hexing Squelcher. So I like it when it's a game piece, you have to spend mana and look for and do the counterplay stuff. I also think that it is wild in my current control deck. The only reason why I play three steps ahead is because it's modal. Maybe Counterspell itself is not what I am thinking it is in my head, because in reality, why do we play Deadly Cover-Up? It's a like an unmoored ego effect, but it's attached to a board wipe. Yeah. Three steps ahead can draw you cards and clone in case you can't Counterspell, because most of the times you can't. So I have found that like nowadays, I don't even know if Counterspells are something I want to see a ton of, because more often than not, like, it just sits in my hand. It doesn't do anything. It's only good in the mirror match. And even then, you have Mistrise Village now, right? So, like, it is kind of nuts, right? I mean, Counterspell may not be great. It's just maybe a good card.
I think counters are kind of actively bad right now, and they will be at least until Cavern rotates. And I'm not convinced that most standards will not look like this standard with the amount of ways to make things uncounterable, because I think it might be just like an intentional design choice. What do you think, Richard? Counterspell Mana League, would those be okay in 2026 standard?
Counterspell bad.
You
would play it, right? You know, you would play
it.
But it's here's the problem, right? Like, the whole point of Counterspell is it's a universal answer that is supposed to trade up on mana, okay? If you're not trading up on mana, you're not really doing anything, right? Because it's a point-in-time answer, right? Like, when they play it, you have to have the two mana up. And if they played it when you didn't have the two mana up, your counterspell is kind of useless, right? We are so efficient in standard now. Like, the days of, like, I play a five drop, let me blow you out with my counterspell, like, is not happening, right? Like, it's just twos and ones coming down. So if you're holding up counter magic, like, whatever, go ahead, right? Like, it's fair and balanced. It's not even that good, right? So I don't think it's a big deal. I feel Mana Leak is essentially counterspell. I feel it's very hard to play around Mana Leak in today's environments. Like, you're just going to pass with mana up. You're going to somehow make it to five mana to play your two drop to play around Mana Leak. Like, I think it's effectively the same thing. You might actually play it over counterspell due to the easier pip requirements, but I don't know, like, we don't play counterspell in the older formats, right? Because the curve is much lower. You're not trading up on mana. You're not really doing anything, right? So you know, obviously a control deck needs some counter magic. They will play some, but I don't think it's like super oppressive, right? I think the old days of standard, if you're like, I'm gonna play prime time and you're like, okay, counterspell. Okay, yeah, that's kind of whack, right? Into a Snapcaster counterspell, yeah, you're screwed, right? But we don't really play like that anymore. They're like, is it Steelcutter? You're holding counterspell. You're like, okay. They're like, Otter. You're like, yeah, right? Into the Floodmaw, counterspell? You're like, it's like giga bad for you, right? So
I'd argue that Spider Sense is probably better. right? Because, like, right now you're seeing Spider Sense counter abilities where, like, again, when your counter spells are dead to Cavern and all that stuff, you can at least stifle something, right? And that has been more beneficial. Tashana's Tidebinder. These are all attached to a body. A simple counter spell, I think, aligns up with maybe not being insane. It might be the best bad card that people will play.
I think 100% you can put Mana League in Standard, and I think you could put Counterspell in Standard, assuming it's like something like the current Standard. I don't actually think it would be oppressive, and it kind of scares me to say that, but I actually think it would probably just be fine. Like, assuming they keep up the hate and the ways that you can, like, resolve things even through counters, like, I don't think Counterspell would see that much play in the current meta, honestly. Like, I think it'd see some, but I don't think it would be, like, one of the most played cards in the format or anything.
I don't know. There's enough printings of it being, how many times it's been reprinted. It better just come back to Standard at some point, right? Well, I need to use all 50 different versions of my counter spells. All right.
All right. Speaking of cards that always used to be in Standard, but haven't been in Standard for about 15 years now. Lightning Bolt. Iconic Standard card for the first half of Magic. I can see, like, two sides on this one. On one hand, as creatures get more snowball-y, you need more efficient answers to those creatures, right? You need ways to be able to kill the Badger Mole-Cub, and Lightning Bolt's a great way to do that. You can kill the Land of Whirls, whatever you need. The scary part is, it also just goes face, and I can imagine some of the decks we've seen over the past year or so, like the Monstrous Rage-style decks, aggro-style decks, loving, like, a removal spell that can also just deal 3 damage to your opponent's face, and maybe that makes it too good. But what do you think? Could Lightning Bolt come back, or is that still just across the line?
I think this is the only... This is a big no-no. I don't think you can bring this one back. I know that,
how many 3-mana 2/4s do you want to see in Standard? Because this is where we're going. 2-mana... 2-mana, 2/4s, and stuff like that. Like, anything that dies to Bolt is bad, right? So I'm with Kim. You can't really do it.
So you think
this is too efficient. It's too efficient, because whereas a counterspell falls flat in, like, a good chunk of situations, I can just send this upstairs, like you had mentioned, Seth, and that's just so much better, right? And then on top of that, like, yeah, maybe this is a how can you say this is unfair? But then you're like, in a world where, like, there's a Steel Cutter Slick Shot and you end on turn 3, yeah, we don't want to go back to that, right? Thing here, we definitely want to try to stay away from that. And Bolt, I think, is just too efficient of a card.
So you mentioned keeping 3 toughness creatures out of the game, Richard. What if it was something like Swords to Plowshares? Would that be different? Because then you don't
have all creatures out of the game. What?
But then you're equally punishing all toughnesses, not just picking on the low toughness creatures. Like, it just gets everyone. Didn't we think we needed better answers to keep up with the better threats?
We are here. I mean, I'm a big hater. It was like everything changed. Not when the Fire Nation attacked.
Don't you do it.
They made Fatal Push.
I knew you were going to say Fatal Push.
Everything. Okay? For like 1-mana, deal with anything. That's as good as Swords to Plowshares. It makes all your creatures need to ETB or, you know, do something resilient or like be protection from everything. Because otherwise, you are just losing some insane amount of tempo when you play your 4-drop and it gets answered by a 1-drop, right? Like, you've just lost the game, like, instantly, right? So that 4-drop better win the game on the spot if your opponent's tapped out, or it has to draw, like, 3 cards on the way down and refund 2-mana. We cannot go Swords to Plowshares. We can't, like I'm willing to die on this hill. I will sacrifice myself for Standard players. if Swords to Plowshares is in the format, it's actually over for creatures.
What about
it? We'll get to Path 1 sec. I want to bring up one quick thing which is, I don't know if you remember, Patrick Sullivan, like, had this really iconic rant on SCG about, it looks kind of quaint now, but Ravenous Chupacabra, and his argument was basically that the cards like that were ruining Magic or Standard because they were just so flexible, and they made it so you couldn't play any creatures because they were just so flexible and you just killed anything. So it sounded like you were kind of making a similar point to that, and I think it might be true that, like, those cards have had a huge impact on how the game plays out. We've moved from, you know, Doomblades and Terrors and these restricted removal spells into more of these catch-all removal spells, and I think it does have a big influence. So maybe Swords would be just, like, too much. I'm curious, though, Krim, you brought up Path. If the drawback is giving your opponent a land, that's gotta be fine, right? I would, like, you know how painful it is to miss a land drop? Like, you feel like you lose the game if you miss a land drop in Standard now. Like, you miss a land drop on turn two, turn three, it's just done. Giving your opponent an extra land is roughly the equivalent to that, right? Like, would Path be okay for 2026 Standard?
It'd be such an awkward spot. I think that, like, if I Path your elemental with it before it sacks itself, I'm only ramping you to get to the hard casting of the elementals. So it's like kind of awkward, but like, is it like, do I let you just let it sack and go to the graveyard and then get Superior Spider-Man out of the game? You know what I mean? Like, I think that card actually would maybe still be, I think that'd be good, right? Because then this way, if I'm removing your creature, you're getting something out of it that kind of like swings the tempo in your favor, right?
Yeah.
So I think that is a card you could have in this Standard.
I feel like Path would be fine. I remember from when it was popular in Modern, it sucks to have to Path the creature. You really do not want to Path a one drop or a two drop, because then you're just like putting your opponent so far ahead on tempo. What do you think, Richard? Would Path be good?
I'm not sure. So Path to Exile actually sucks. I've been saying it. If there was a podcast 15 years ago, Seth, I've been saying it since the days of Advent. I'm like, why would you ever play this card? You can't Path anything on curve. But it could go in a deck that's so like if you had an absolute control deck, right? That could somehow, like, it was strong enough that it could weather this increase in mana. I don't know if that exists. It would be super oppressive. You know, if you just go like Path into Sweeper, you know, holding up Counterspeller, so you can't do anything anymore, right? Like, if there was, like, a level of deck that could do that, then it becomes really oppressive. But for most decks, this is not good. Like, if you're just playing some Selesnya mid-range deck, you're like, I need some removal, do I put in Path? Like, no, the ramping of your opponent is a big deal. So, I don't know, right? But there could exist some oppressive control deck or something that, or maybe combo decks, right? Like, if we had Omniscience combo, which we do, by the way. But, like, if that was, like, the premier... if that was, like, Azorius was a premier, and you're like, look, I'll give you the land, doesn't matter, right? I can just efficiently remove any threat, and I'm just going to combo off and win. It's good to go. So, like, those decks really scare me, which is... And then, at that point, Path to Exile just Swords to Plowshares, right? But, you know, your normal mid-range piles, your aggro decks, all that crap, like, Path is, like, really bad for you. But your combo decks, your control decks, they could utilize it and make it super oppressive. So it's not clear to me which one it is, but I'm willing to say it's probably Sketch, right?
You think it might still be?
Really? Yeah.
Do you want Azorius Omniscience or Azorius Control having four Path to Exiles, right? Like, do you really want this?
If you're getting me lands, I kind of don't mind, right? Like, as of right now,
but
I'm
dead
just,
on, like, okay, so you lands play your five-drop creature, but you still dead when they untap, right?
they're going to fight me with, like, a wet noodle or something like that, right? Like, that's the thing. I think he could totally be fine, because the tempo really swings in your opponent's favor if you Path any turn prior to, like, three.
I think.
And you need to remove so much stuff now. Like, I think in the late game, when we have so many resources, it's irrelevant. Then Path becomes a house, right? But it's essentially like that new Jace, the 2-mana Jace. Casting this, you can't do it before turn 4 or whatever. Because it's so bad, right, if you cast it any earlier than turn 4.
I think Path's an interesting one. I would lean towards it being okay. But I think, Richard, the point that there could be decks where it would not be okay, and it really only takes one deck, right? Like, most of the broken cards that have been banned in Standard, it's not because they're good in a whole bunch of decks, it's because there's one deck that's way too good with that card. So I think that is a concern. I think it's way safer than Swords, though. Like, if that's the concern, like, I think Path is, like, either fine or very close to fine. Swords is a lot more sketchy. All right, we've talked a lot about answers, but what about a couple of threats? Like, what about the other side of the spectrum? Like, something like Jace the Mind Sculptor, formerly the best Planeswalker of all time, iconically unbanned in Modern after a huge amount of freak out. It was a card that people thought could never get unbanned in Modern because it was just Jace and it was too good, and then it doesn't even really see play in Modern anymore.
It's a pet card now.
I have honestly come around to thinking that Jace the Mind Sculptor would be perfectly fine in Standard. And I do have some fear, kind of like what you said with Path, that maybe, like, there's this perfect control deck with all the pieces that can make Jace oppressive. But after my experience with it being unbanned in Modern and thinking about the current power level and just how fast Standard is, Is Jace coming down on turn four in brainstorming actually something that's concerning in 2026 standard? It is very hard for me to see how that is like a worrying line of play. But what do you guys think? Am I missing something? Like, is Jace too good for standard?
I think let's see how good he is at all. Like I think he would just be a solid card, but I think he's fine for standard.
Right? I feel like standard.
It'd be like right? Ryle, basically. Like the Ryle that exists in standard, where it's like, oh, my lessons deck. I want some for like the grindy matchups. I play a couple copies in my sideboard. Like I could see Jace having that role, but I think the days of like four of Jace in the main deck, best card in the format, best planeswalker ever, we're just past that point, I think.
Well, nowadays we have planeswalker removal, right?
Yeah. Like, you can just
planeswalker
kill it,
removal,
yes.
It's much easier and you don't have to use Jace Bellerin, right? So this is a much more like answerable threat now than it was like 10, 15 years ago or whatever. So I think it'd be just a fine card. And if control has a win condition, meaning that the game can end, great, right? Like that's awesome. But it also, the amount of work you had to get to that point where you would eventually like you know, fate seal your opponent out of the game, you had to do a lot of work. And the answers back then, or the threats back then, were much more tame than they are now. So if you see me tap out and play a Jace on turn 9, sure, whatever, right? But like on turn 4, I'm losing that Jace instantly. That Jace is going right to the bin. So Jace is almost like a dead card any turn prior to turn like 8.
4-mana brainstorm. Is 4-mana brainstorm not good enough for standard? 4-mana sorcery speed.
It's not even 4-mana brainstorm. It's 4-mana flood maw. And it's 4-mana unsummon.
Sorcery speed.
So all of these discussion points have been theoretical, but I played Cobblade versus Vivi Cauldron in our best standard ever. And every single time it came down and was a 4-mana bounce because there was so much pressure on the board. You can't sit there and brainstorm. In the off chance that I did brainstorm, it gets instantly dealt with Torch or Flood Maw. Like, it gets instantly removed for 1 mana. Remember when we talked about you play your 4-mana card, it gets dealt with 1 mana? Like, you're kind of hosed? Like, yes, that's what happened. And Seth, on the other hand, was sitting there casting Quantum Riddlers and Winter Night Stories, and his hand was, like, chock full while maintaining tempo. While, you know, not only that, but he was, like, applying pressure at the same time. Jace is just washed. Like, Jace is...
My goat, no.
Like, he was just washed. Like, I would take him out. Like, I would not play him at all. And Quantum Riddler does the job, right? Draws as many cards, puts a clock on the opponent, has other synergies. Just, again, 1-mana removal dealing with literally anything has kind of broken everything, right? Remember the old days where Jace dodged the counterspell? You were good to go, right? Oh, like, okay, untap Jace, it's over, right? Like, here we go. Now they're like, untap, torch, untap, you know, flood mob. Like, I don't even need untap. I just have 1 mana here. I can just do it right on head step, you know? Like, it's just so bad. So Jace is washed.
Out of all the bracket matches we played so far, which is not a huge number, but 5 that have been live so far, 4 that have been live so far, that one was easily the most lopsided, I felt like, out of the ones we played. Like, the Cobblade trying to keep up with Vivi Cauldron was, I almost felt bad for the Cobblade side, because that's, like, such an iconic deck, and Jace is, like, such an iconic card. And it wasn't even close. I know I ended up stealing a game or something, but it just didn't feel close the entire time. So
I think backs of 1/1 flyers, not even Jace the Mind Sculptor. It's not like Jace came down and locked the game. It was like, no, it was just 1/1 flyers got in there.
The caw got it done.
It all is right. Wild. Remember when we did the modern episode?
Yeah.
We did that like a while back, timeless modern or whatever. And you just resolved a 3-fairy, and it was over.
Oh,
like,
God.
It was over. Like Jace 3, like, doesn't bounce that, you know, Cobblade doesn't have planeswalker answers, Teferi doesn't, you know, get, like, Teferi legend ruled. It was over. Oh, man.
I'd much rather have Jace Mind Sculptor in standard than 3-fairy. I will say that. 3-fairy,
Three-fairy's
fine.
Put
that back in. No.
Okay, I'm kidding, obviously.
All right, I gotta throw one more out there, and this one's just for me, because this is a card I want back in standard, but I know they'll never do it. But maybe Stone Rain. 3-mana, pull up a land. This was in standard, literally, like, it's so funny how the game has changed, because this was another card that was continuously in standard for, like, the first 20 years of Magic or something. Like, more than half of Magic's life, you could just always play Stone Rain in standard. And since they got rid of it, now you can never play Stone Rain in standard. In a world where decks are so efficient, where threats are so efficient, Stone Rain would suck. There's no way this is a good card or a playable card in standard, right? Like, could you imagine running a Stone Rain out against a Badger Mole Cub deck to, like, blow up a land as they're making 12 mana on turn three? Yeah, blow up that Earthbend land, trigger their landfall again for them. Like,
yeah.
There's no way this card would be any good. Like, am I missing something? Am I just biased because I like blowing up lands? Do you think Stone Rain would actually be a problematic card? I know.
Was it ever good? Wasn't it just banned or, you know, not put in because it's too salty? Like, was there ever a time where you're like, four Stone Rains in my standard deck is good?
Funny enough, in modern, you would.
There was a Ponza deck. There were, like, land destruction decks at some point, so maybe something like that. But no, I don't think there were times when that I remember, at least, where you just jam four Stone Rains in your random red deck or something.
This card would be bad, right? Even with Llanowar Elf into, the, like, Stone Rain on turn two. Like, I still think that that's the best case scenario.
If you're on the play and you go turn one elf, turn two, blow up your first land, that actually is, like, pretty, maybe it's, like, not too good, but maybe it is just too frustrating for people who aren't used to land destruction. Maybe that's the reason we just can't. Maybe Wizards is right on this one and I'm the one that's wrong. Because that would be brutal. Like, I could imagine some very angry posts on the Arena Reddit from players who just got turn one, like, ramp into blow up your land on turn two, into blow up your land on turn three.
I mean, imagine Badger Mole going like Grull, right? And then, okay, so now on the turn before you sweep, I just blow up your land because I am accelerated well beyond your mana, right? So arming the Badger Mole deck with land destruction does sound like a disaster waiting to happen.
Oh, maybe it actually would be good. Like, if you could keep, like, a Badger Mole Cub deck, if you could keep the control deck off of their Wrath for one extra turn, that probably is enough to win you the game.
Control deck, any deck. Maybe the only time it's bad is, like, in the mirror.
It would not be good. It would not be good in the mirror, no. What do you think? I see you thinking, Richard.
Is there a chance it's actually good? If they're, like, a three-color deck, and you're on the play, you accelerate, and Stone Rain is destroy any land, right? So you take the dual land. They're probably not playing Magic anymore, right? Like, if they don't have enough fixing to fix this.
Think about it.
At the same time.
You could shut off Verges. Potentially.
Three mana if, like, to potentially not impact the board in any way. Like, yeah, you take a land off, right? But, like, if your opponent's just like, okay, second land, play a real two drop. Like, you just spent three mana to not impact the board. And we're like, okay, well, you had the Llanowar Elf. You accelerated mana. Like, is it literally anything better? Like, you know, like, the strength was not the Stone Rain. It was the acceleration, right?
Yeah,
so, like...
Yeah.
But the deck is loaded with acceleration and Badger Mole Cub. Like, again, like increasing your mana and hitting your land on your key turns, throwing you off entirely. That's much worse than a counterspell, right?
It is also, I've played so many Stone Rains because I love blowing up lands. It's also, like, really bad in a lot of situations. Like, it's really good in the best situations, but as, like, a top deck in a random matchup, it's, like, Thought Seize level bad, where you're just like, oh, I really do not. Like, your opponent has six lands in play, and you're playing a normal game, and you top deck Stone Rain. You're like, oh, okay, what's the point? Like, what am I going to do with blow up your six land, put you down to five? Like, it doesn't even matter. So
is it wild
swingy.
To say this is not just the Grawl version of a duress Thought Seize or whatever? Like, late game, I don't want to draw a discard spell. Doesn't mean I'm not going to play the discard spell. I think this card is very strong in with the acceleration that green has currently.
It is true, but the turn one ramp, it is much better. I don't know.
Truly like feast or famine here. We're talking about, like, if I get you in the early turns, the game is over, right? Like, you are not playing Magic.
I also think
it causes the funny mulligan, right? So when you know your opponent has Fulminator Mages or whatever, you're like, or you're playing Ponzi, like, do I keep the six land one threat hand, right? Or do I try to mulligan to a normal hand that could potentially be five threats, two lands, and if the Stone Rain hits, I'm cooked. Like, what do you do? So you can just get mind game out by just, like, having nothing and just all these lands, and they don't have the Stone Rain, and they just Badger Mole Cub you to death, right?
And
so it makes it kind of interesting. I'm willing to entertain this. I'm willing to entertain this.
No, do not entertain this, because one, Ponza players are stone-faced, and they will you'll never get a read on them, okay? Because they're out here registering Ponza at a big tournament, and then they blow up your lands. It's terrifying, man.
It's so fun. It's so fun. I will be that Ponza player blowing up the lands. I think that's the biggest problem, is if they put it in standard, I would just make so many videos about it, and it would make so many people salty that they would never do it. So I don't think it would ever actually happen. At the risk of derailing us right at the end of the cast, I got to bring up one more point, which is, I think a lot of these cards actually suffer by the fact we're in 3-year standard, because I think it would be a lot easier to do some sort of test run on a Stone Rain or a Swords or a Thoughtseize if you could do the old, like, put it in the last set before rotation, so it's only, like, in the format for a year, and like, what's the worst that could happen? It's going to be gone soon. But now that every card's in the format for 3 years, I think it would be a lot harder to take a risk on a Stone Rain type style card.
I think that you can get around that, though, by actually banning things. And then
that is also true.
3-year standard, those concerns, just ban something if it's like actually that bad.
That would also solve it. If they just banned things aggressively, then you try whatever you wanted to and it would be fine. But anyway, I think that's our podcast for today. So any final thoughts on the way out the door as we wrap things up today?
Yes. Tarmogoyf would be terrible and totally acceptable in the standard.
That boy's dead already. Leave him alone. Why you gotta bring his name up?
Get him. Kick him while he's down. One more
No one would play Tarmogoyf if it was in standard.
I would play Tarmogoyf. One person named Richard would play mediocre cards so you can farm your wins with Stone Rain. Okay?
Richard's out here giving free wins.
Anyway, everyone, that's our cast for today. Thanks for listening. Richard Krim, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.